Hi, and welcome to Feeling Healthy with Dr. Scott Lear. I'm your host, Dr. Scott Lear. I'm a health scientist at Simon Fraser University, as well as an avid exerciser, blogger, father, and heart patient. Each episode, I interview a leading health expert to break down science into simple steps to help you live a long, happy, and healthy life. So sit back and enjoy the show. On today's podcast, I'm joined by Dr. Jonathan Little for a discussion on exercise snacking. Dr. Little is an associate professor in the School of Health and Exercise Sciences at the University of British Columbia. His research focuses on optimizing diet and exercise interventions for the prevention and treatment of type 2 diabetes, and also studies the health and performance benefits of time-efficient exercise strategies such as high-intensity interval training, or HIIT. His recent work has extended these ideas into the concept of exercise snacks, short, isolated bouts of vigorous activity that can be incorporated throughout the day. Hello, Jonathan, and thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
So this is a great topic. And whenever I've mentioned to people about exercise snacking, of course, the first thing they think of is food. Are we going to be talking about eating? But that's not the case, is it?
No, yeah, you know, we joked around about this. It's the type of snack that's good for you. So we're talking about these short little bouts of exercise. In our version or our interpretation of exercise snacks, it's vigorous exercise. So you've got to be working at a bit of a harder pace, but for a short little period of time, less than 1 minute, and you can kind of sprinkle them throughout the day. So I'm sure we'll get to this. We've done a few controlled studies in the lab, and now we're trying to move it outside of the lab.
Fantastic. Over the years, at least when I think back to my kinesiology degree I took back before the turn of the century, we were talking about things like you had to go to the gym for 20 to 30 minutes, get your heart rate up at a certain zone. And over the decades, there's been a gradual decrease in what the guidelines say in terms of where you get this benefit. And now you're talking about something like maybe 30 seconds or a minute. So I'm interested first to know, what drove you to start looking at smaller and smaller bouts of exercise?
Yeah, so if I think about this, there's probably at least three or four things that kind of culminated into this. So the first one is we're studying this way of exercising called HIIT, or high intensity interval training. And then there's even a subset of HIIT, which we refer to as sprint interval training, or SIT, where the bouts of exercise are really short, but you have to go really hard. And in that work, we showed, and others as well, over a series of studies, many studies, that you can actually get aerobic benefit. So improvements in cardiorespiratory fitness, improvements in muscle mitochondrial and oxidative capacity in our muscles. You can get these improvements with very small amounts of exercise, provided you're willing to work hard enough. So there's a trade-off. You've got to go pretty hard, and we could get into how hard in certain studies. But that's where the time efficiency of exercise came in. So that was kind of one thing. We're studying this, and in that field, gradually it went down to essentially how low can you go, or how little can you get away with. And SIT turned into brief, vigorous exercise. And we've written some, had done some studies and written some papers on that. So that was kind of in the mix. We don't yet know what the mechanisms for why those short little bursts of exercise are. And one of the theories is that high ATP turnover, so really demanding a lot of energy in a short period of time, is one of the signals. So that led us to say, well, do you have to do those bouts all in one tiring workout, or could you separate them out throughout the day so that you're calling upon your energy systems to produce a lot of ATP very quickly, but it doesn't feel that hard because you don't have to fatigue yourself? So that kind of came into play. Then, you know, when the guidelines changed to take out that 10-minute minimum requirement, then that sort of opened the door for some more of these brief exercise strategies. And I think all of that is muddled up with the concept of breaking up sitting and prolonged sedentary time. So I think when we first started talking about these exercise snacks in the lab, it was, you know, with grad students, and a lot of these studies were coming out of breaking up sitting with, you know, standing or light intensity activity. And we said, hey, this is great, but you're not going to get fitness benefits. You're very likely not going to get fitness benefits if you break up your sitting by standing up for 2 minutes or, you know, doing light intensity walking. What about if you broke up your sitting with something vigorous? You might be able to get the best of both worlds, break up sitting and get fitness benefits. So all of those things were kind of jumbled together into thinking about this concept of vigorous exercise snacks for improving your fitness and health.
In your research that you've been doing, how short have you been studying? Where have you got to? Like, you mentioned the new guidelines, which came out, the WHO had them out, I think, in November, that got rid of the 10-minute. And I think before that, there were some US guidelines that did that, saying there's no benefit to say that you needed to do at least 10 minutes. But you've gone even shorter than that. So what's the shortest increment that you've studied?
Yeah, so probably 20 seconds is the shortest. So I can kind of describe the two studies that kicked this off. We did one of them. These are both lab-based studies. So one of them was using cycling sprints on a specialized bike, where so then we can measure the power output and control everything. And what we did there, we had people do 3 20-second sprints separated by 1 to 4 hours throughout the day. So essentially you're coming in, short little warm up, get your legs going, blast as hard as you could for 20 seconds, and then that's it. And then you would take, you know, go off, and it was students in this study. So they'd go off to class or whatever, and then they'd come back in the lab a couple hours later, do it again. And they would do that 3 times in the day. And we compared that to a group that came in and did a traditional workout with the same 3 20-second sprints. So they would come in, warm up, and do 20 seconds, 2 minute break, 20 seconds, 2 minute break, 20 seconds. So, you know, they were still only working out for about 10 or 12 minutes, but in a kind of a dedicated sprint interval training workout. And in that study, we saw essentially very similar adaptations and the same improvements in fitness. So their VO2 peak or VO2 max and their performance. So we did a performance test where they had to complete 10 kilometers of cycling as quick as they could in the lab. And the improvements, both groups improved, and they both improved to about the same extent. So that was the one lab study. So I guess they're 3 20-second bursts throughout the day. Sure. Then we did a study that was a little bit more translatable or applicable. So we did stair climbing, and you ascend or climb up 3 flights of stairs, which takes about 20 seconds when you do that. And that study was not as all out as the cycling sprints. We instructed the individuals, it was meant to be translatable. So we said, ascend the stairs as quickly and safely as possible, and you have to touch every stair. So quickly and safely as possible, the individuals, again, these were university students, were going fast, but it certainly wasn't all out exercise. And again, so that this exact same design, so they would come in 3 times during the day and do this 3 flights of stairs separated by a couple of hours each. It took them 18 to 22 seconds or something to do 3 flights of stairs. So that's where we got the kind of 20 second. We certainly don't know what the minimum is and the dose response, if you want to call it that, for exercise snacks. Certainly, you know, 1 or 2 seconds is probably not going to be enough, but it looks like 20 seconds is enough. So we've kind of tried to define this. We're writing an article right now for Exercise Sports Science Reviews, and we're saying 20 to 60 second bursts of exercise interspersed throughout the day.
You're looking, as you mentioned, moderate or vigorous or higher intensity type of activity. Is that because of your outcome that you're looking at is changing in fitness? Because there does seem to be some benefit, even if people were getting up, moving around, in terms of, as you probably know, because you're an expert in type 2 diabetes, in terms of blood sugar as well. But if you want those fitness benefits, you kind of have to get your heart rate up. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah. So that's the concept. And certainly it's similar to when I talk about my research on high intensity interval training. I definitely don't say walking isn't good or light intensity exercise isn't good. Certainly it is. In this case, you're exactly right. We're trying to say break up the sitting or the sedentary periods, doing light or moderate intensity exercises is going to be good. And we have evidence for that, but you can get fitness benefits as well if you're able to go a little harder. And we've done one study related to that insulin sensitivity, metabolism, breaking up, sitting with these stair climbing bouts. So in that study, individuals with overweight and obesity, at once per hour, they did three flights of stairs. Again, it takes them about 20 to 30 seconds to do that. And again, quickly and safely as possible. And we showed evidence of improved insulin sensitivity throughout the day with hourly stair climbing snacks, we called it in that study.
That's fantastic, because being somebody that talks to people about their physical activity, I always hear people say, oh, I don't have enough time to do it. So now you've kind of myth busted that. What's your message to people when they say, oh, I don't have enough time? What would you say to that person?
This is what I think, you know, from the knowledge translation or getting this out, I don't, this concept of really short bouts of exercise is meant to replace moderate intensity exercise or other types of physical activity. But I'm not a behavioral scientist, but I would say we can remove that kind of perceived barrier, right? So to me, it becomes, that's okay. You will get benefits, or you can get benefits from very small bouts of exercise. So, you know, don't worry or don't beat yourself up about it. You don't have to go to the gym. You don't have to plan this out. You can be, you know, taking a break from one Zoom meeting to another Zoom meeting, or when you're, you know, my typical example is when you're going to the for a washroom break, or you're going to get a coffee, you use that as a time to say, okay, I'm going to do a quick exercise snack. So that might mean climbing the stairs to go to the washroom on a different floor in your house or your building, or you work it in. So you say, okay, before I go to get my coffee, 20 quick squats or something like that. And I think that's kind of where we want to take this exercise snacks idea, where it becomes purposeful yet incorporated into your day.
That's pretty interesting. I've read about habits of writers. So these are people who sit down in front of a computer, you know, much like maybe you and I do in our in our daily jobs. And they don't use, haven't used the term exercise snack, but Dan Brown, he talks about how he would make his computer shut down. He has an app where it shuts down for 2 minutes and then he would just do sit-ups and push-ups beside his desk. He says he does it for fitness, but he also says he does it because it helps clear his mind. And in those studies, have any of the participants, you know, mentioned kind of, it gives that, like, they feel refreshed afterwards, even though it's so short?
Yeah, we haven't measured that yet. But, you know, it's a logical next step. Right before COVID, we were planning on rolling out a stair climbing exercise snack study in the workplace. And we were going to measure work productivity and focus and concentration and that sort of thing. And I think that might be maybe where the biggest sell here might be for things like companies, you know, maybe you have to do this to get fitness benefits for exercise physiologists or exercise people like us, that's great. But for an employer, they might not care about that as much as they should, but work productivity or satisfaction and focus in that. So I definitely think that's great. I hadn't heard that Dan Brown did that, but certainly with everything, you know, there's reinventing the wheel in academia, right? So we're not the first people to come up with the term exercise snacks or this concept. And we continually find papers from, you know, 2009 and 1999. And I just was reading an opinion piece from Harvey Howlett, I think it was called, a Harvard medical doctor who in 2010 wrote about exercise snacks in a Newsweek article and things like that. So I think the concept kind of isn't all that new. Maybe the vigorous nature that we're bringing to it or trying to say, hey, you can get the fitness benefits but certainly I think looking at those cognitive outcomes, if you want to call it that, are then one of the next steps. And we or others should definitely look at that.
Looking at it from the fitness point of view is like another big push about the benefits of getting people moving. Because as I said early on, you know, the impression from the earliest recommendations, that type of going to the gym thing, gave people this idea was all or nothing. So if I can't do half an hour three times a week, you know, I might as well not do anything. But we're finding that, you know, as soon as you get up and move around, that's where you start getting the benefits. Where would it fit into somebody's exercise routine that if they were doing these exercise snacks a few times a day, would you still recommend that if they should get some continuous activity as well? And then the notion that I see about the high intensity interval training, especially on fitness websites, is they say, look, you can get the same benefit by spending less time. You're just working harder. So could it be a case whereby for somebody who doesn't enjoy going out for a half hour run or something like that, that they can still benefit from these shorter bouts?
Yeah, so I think maybe I'll tackle that in two ways. So the first one, we haven't done the studies to look at adding exercise snacks onto continuous or that sort of thing. And obviously there's lots of different studies that we could do there. I think I wouldn't say as an exercise physiologist, as well as just thinking logically, that performing the, you know, three or four of these short little 20 to 30 second snacks a day is not going to lead to the same benefits that we know we have, you know, solid evidence for continuous exercise of, you know, 30 minutes a day or 150 minutes per week. So I don't think it can replace all of those benefits. And certainly there's differences in physiology and the energy production and cardiovascular stress and all that sort of thing that we could pontificate would be different. But so I don't think it's going to replace, but I certainly think for that person who says, I was going to go exercise today, but work got really busy and I missed going to the gym, or, you know, I was supposed to wake up early to exercise today and I slept in, you know, to me, that would be a case where we'd say, hey, the day's not lost. You can still, you know, with short little bursts, get the benefits. And I'm obviously biased towards low volume, high intensity interval training. And I'll acknowledge that as someone who studies it as well as practices it. But I there's many times in my life where that has come into play, you know, picking my daughter up at piano practice, and I wore my running clothes to plan to go for a run, and work happened, someone called me to talk. Now all of a sudden I've got only 15 minutes left to do the run that I planned for 45 minutes. Well, I'll go and do 10, 30 second sprints or something like that. And I know in my head, hey, I just got a good workout out of that for, you know, a good aerobic cardiovascular workout, as opposed to maybe giving up or saying, oh, okay, I'll only go for the 15 minute run. So I think that there could be, and maybe that's, you know, personal, maybe we need behavioral scientists to help us with how to frame that. But I do think that there could be that angle for, hey, it's not all lost. If you didn't make it to your workout or the gym, you can do this, or adding it on to your regular routine, because it certainly shouldn't be a bad thing to get a little bit more vigorous activity in throughout the day.
When it comes to like doing HITs, which are a bit longer, and you usually would do those, you know, an interval anywhere, I guess, from a minute to 4 minutes with a bit of rest, and then you would do them consecutively. So you still may be exercising, like if you were on a stationary bike, you still may be doing like 20 or 30 minutes. But there is some suggestion that that may be just, in that situation, that may be just as good as if you were doing 60 minutes at a moderate rate.
Yeah. So, and I think that there, I mean, we don't have a ton of super well-powered studies on every single outcome, but I think it's safe to say, you know, from our work on interval training and others, that we'll say 20 minutes of interval training, and you know, just to throw it out there, half of that is in the hard phase. So, you know, we use a 10 minutes on, 1 minute on, 1 minute off times 10. That approach, 20 minutes of HIIT, it is roughly equivalent to 45 to 50 minutes of moderate intensity continuous exercise on most of the outcomes that we can measure. So whether it's molecular and muscle or whole body in terms of fitness, I think most people would agree there. So, you know, and I don't know if that's all that new. We kind of know that the 2-to-1 benefit of vigorous to moderate, right? And you know, it depends which guidelines you look at. But if you look at the guidelines and say 75 minutes of vigorous and or 150 minutes of moderate exercise per week, that's giving a 2-to-1 credit for vigorous exercise. And I think we could categorize doing a HIIT workout, even though you're going on off, as a vigorous exercise. So I don't know if that answers the question or what you think about that.
Definitely. And when you're talking about vigorous in moderate, that's more like relational to each person. So what might be vigorous for you may be too much for somebody else. How would you define it for somebody to say, okay, this is the sweet spot or where moderate is, and this is where vigorous, what kind of signals could they use?
Yeah, totally. And that, so that's great. That's one thing I always, when talking about HIIT or vigorous exercise, it's individualized, right? And the best example I give, we do a lot of studies in participants who have type 2 diabetes in our lab. Older, they tend to be older, you know, in their 60s, and walking up an incline is 80% of their maximum heart rate or VO2 max. So for them, doing intervals is, you know, walking up a slight incline, they're going to need to take a break or take the intensity down and recover after a minute or two at that, because it's at 80% of their maximum. So, and I view that as that's a bonus of interval training, is that it's naturally individualized or in that way. Some of the cues, you know, the best one I think that that I can come up with that's not related to measuring your heart rate or your VO2 or anything like that is one of my former PhD students, Monique Francois, who's done a lot of this work, and she was from New Zealand. She always says, you know, they need to be huffing and puffing. So you need to be able to, you know, maybe that talk test, you need to be above that ability to talk, and you need to be, you know, huffing or breathing hard to get to know that you're in that vigorous range. So again, not to say that exercising when you're not huffing or is not good, but if you want to try to cue yourself to vigorous, it's got to be that kind of exercise where you know, okay, I'm breathing hard and I can't really talk or carry on a conversation because I'm working hard enough that it makes that hard. We've tried to use things like RPE, so rating of perceived exertion, which is a little bit easier for most people than heart rate or VO2. So a 0 to 10 scale is often used, or the 6 to 20 scale, but we actually find that they don't work all that well for intervals, because the on periods or the hard periods are often too short to actually get an accurate RPE. And then another thing that we know that people do, again, I'm not a behavioral scientist, but my wife is people will project. So if they know they have to do 10 intervals, then on the first one, they'll say, well, I'm going to rate this one lower because I know it's going to get harder as we go. So with that, we can't really use RPE very well to say, okay, go at 8 out of 10 on the RPE scale, because it doesn't really work for short intervals.
Yeah. And I guess the important thing, which is also helpful for people to understand, is even though you might be huffing and puffing, it's only a short amount of time. And for some people, you're doing those 3 flights of stairs, you might not even start sweating by the time you get to the top there.
Yeah, no. And that's one thing in that workplace study that we wanted to look at and we're interested, because we think that this concept, you know, the anecdotal evidence is, you know, 20 to 30 seconds is okay. You don't really start sweating, but you know, when you go for over a minute, then you're going to have sweating. Obviously there's some individual differences there, but that's where we think it might be attractive here to get at that. Hey, you got to push yourself, but you're not going to be sweating and kind of have a lot of recovery time after, you know, when we do a HIIT workout, you probably couldn't finish that, go back to your desk and start working. You need to slow down and cool down a little bit. Whereas this approach, the exercise snacking approach, I don't think requires cooling down and all that sort of thing.
So as you're talking about exercise snacking and doing like 20 second bursts and then, you know, not doing activity, I'm just thinking about soccer players watching soccer games. You know, like the players themselves are doing like really short bursts. I know they do a lot of training outside of that, but they're in good shape. I imagine too, though, that 100 meter sprinters aren't doing much more than these short intervals. Like Usain Bolt and Andre DeGrasse are, you know, when their race is only 10 seconds or so, they're probably not going and doing a lot of moderate type exercise to help with their trainings. So they're are kind of, you know, obviously these are elite type athletes, but in some ways that's similar. They're just doing probably more of it than what you're advocating.
Yeah, no, I think probably that's a good, you know, good way to, I would think most people would think that sprinters or those burst athletes are pretty fit. And this is, you know, analogous to that. Another thing that we're progressing to do with these exercise snacks is using body weight resistance exercises. So I mentioned squats or jumping jacks, lunges, that sort of thing. And, you know, we think we can get a program that would be individualized and allow people with mobility impairments, you know, if you can't do a jumping jack, but you could do a modified version, that we might be able to get aerobic and some of the musculoskeletal or resistance exercise type benefits all in one. So, you know, then we'd be hitting fitness, breaking up sitting time, and getting some resistance type exercise in there. So that's kind of one of the next stages, which I think will be hit on all of those kind of components of fitness and health, which would be really cool. Cause we know that people, I mean, resistance training is, yes, you can do it at home, but it's one of the ones where most people that do resistance training are the dedicated exercisers who go to the gym. Even though it's in our guidelines, it's kind of the forgotten type of exercise often.
And that's great, because what you're doing is bringing something that, you know, as you said, from the exercise physiology lab into what people can do in their own homes, which is also fantastic, because at the beginning of the pandemic, it was exercise equipment that was one of the fastest things to sell out. So, you know, being able to do those things like the squats, push-ups, I do burpees every now and then. I find those extremely challenging. I have no problem getting my heart rate up with doing a few burpees in a row. And these are things too, and that would be great, even like for the worker just beside their desk, you know, you get a bunch of people doing squats or burpees, and can picture this like looking over these cubicles and seeing these people jumping up and down for their 20 second burst. As we close up, what would be some recommendations for people who want to get going, or some tips that can help build it into their lifestyle? Because this to me seems like a low-hanging fruit for people who want to be exercising, but have that notion that I have to, as we talked about, it's still kind of in society that we have to be going out for a run for half an hour or more, or going to the gym or something like that.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think, you know, fairly general recommendations here, but I think, you know, starting small, and this idea of exercise snacks shows you how small that actually can be. So I think you can pick, there's any type of activity that you like. So whether that's running on the spot, walking up the stairs, jumping jacks, burpees, air squats, you know, all of those would work. So I think that's a bonus. Doesn't have to be one specific thing, and you know, start small and try to incorporate it, whether it's having a cue every time I go to get a coffee, or every time I need to I'm going to have a washroom break, I do 20 squats, or I do 20 seconds of running on the spot, or that sort of thing. I think that should encourage you that, hey, you could get some fitness benefits from this. Or maybe at the very least, you get some improvements in your, you know, focus or that throughout the day. So I think that would be my tip, is that it doesn't need to be prescriptive one way or a certain number of times. You can kind of do it whenever you want, but maybe thinking about a cue to remind yourself to do it would be a good practical suggestion.
And I guess the main thing, as you point out, is having that cue to remind people. I've used a cooking timer, but I've since evolved from the cooking timer to using the alarm on my phone. And I haven't looked into those apps that actually shut down and lock your computer for a certain amount of time, but that might be something as well, because sometimes you do get engrossed in what you're doing, but especially when you might be like working on something and nothing's happening and your mind's like just stuck, and you're kind of, and I would fight in my head, okay, I should get up and go, but no, I should finish this. And then, you know, 5 minutes later, I haven't finished it. But just taking that break can definitely help. Are there resources that if people wanted to learn more, whether it's just general physical activity, that you would direct them to?
Yeah, we have at UBC, I think it's called UBC Move, has created some videos related to the exercise snacks. So there's some, and again, they're not rocket science videos. Again, it's not prescriptive, but just with different types of exercises that you might want to do to incorporate those snacks, exercise snacks into your day. So I can provide you with the link to that to post through. But I think one of the benefits of this is that it is pretty easy. We don't need to be that prescriptive. So this can kind of be as you like or as you feel is appropriate for you. And you just sprinkle it into your day, whether it's in addition to your regular exercise or as a way to start and know that you're going to boost your fitness and help your metabolism by breaking up your sitting throughout the day.
You know, for us now, we've probably been, well, I think you're standing while you're doing this podcast. I've been sitting for the past half hour, so I probably need to get up and do my exercise snack before moving on to the next test. But I really want to thank you for coming onto the podcast, Jonathan. This has been really exciting. And, you know, I could spend, you know, a few more hours talking about this because it's just so interesting knowing that we can do so little and get so much benefit from it.
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, it was a very, very fun conversation. So thanks a lot.
Thanks for joining us this time on Feeling Healthy with Dr. Scott Lear. Make sure to hit that subscribe button so you won't miss out on any future shows. Your support keeps this podcast going. For more tips on healthy living, check out my website at drscottlear.com. Until next time, be healthy.